Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight was scheduled to be poker player Dusty Leatherass Schmidt, who has written a new book with Paul Hoppe called Poker in Practice, Critical Concepts. Unfortunately, Dusty had a family emergency and had to bail, but he responsibly replaced himself with his co-author, Paul Hoppe, who is with us tonight. We'll be talking to Paul in a few minutes. Jackie Gahn, one of the pioneers of downtown Las Vegas, died 8 days ago. At least locally in Las Vegas, the media has been full of tributes. Gahn and Benny Binion, longtime friends and competitors, did a lot to create loose gambling conditions in Las Vegas. The legacy remains today, with Las Vegas still having much looser games than most other gambling locations. Advantage players owe a tip of the hat to Jackie Gahn and Benny Binion. At Jackie's funeral mass on Monday, St. Patrick's Day, it was more of an Irish wake than a religious service. Yes, there were four priests and a bishop, hymns and Bible readings, but there were also Irish songs such as Danny Boy, Irish Lullaby, When Irish Eyes Are Smiling, and a few others. Nevada's senior senator, Harry Reid, spoke, as did Steve Wynn, Las Vegas' best public speaker, who spoke so well that attendees applauded lustily, forgoing the typical prescription against applause at most church services. I'm glad I attended. Do you have any comment on this, Richard?
No, not really. I never met Jackie Gahn. I think I got barred at the El Cortez within 10 minutes. Didn't really know him or spend much time in the El Cortez.
All right. Richard, you received an email from a player in Vancouver wanting to know whether a particular blackjack game was playable. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we welcome your emails. This particular player lives in Vancouver, and he says that all of the games are continuous shuffling machines, except a couple of double decks that are cut in half. And he was wondering about one person told him he needed a 1-8 spread, and somebody else told him the game was slightly beatable with a 1-2 spread. Anyway, anybody who's serious about counting cards, who wants to take it seriously, should pick up a software called Casino Verite, where you can plug in, the size of your bet spread, the rules of the game, the penetration that the casino is dealing, and it'll tell you exactly what the game is worth, what your edge is, what your chance of going broke is based on your bankroll. So it's definitely worth the investment if you want to take it seriously. The one thing I would say about that is casinos are really dumb in many ways, but one thing they have learned over the last 50 years is what card counting looks like. And when you have a casino full of continuous shuffling machines with two double deck games, you can bet that those double deck games are watched very, very closely, and I would be surprised if you would get any length of time counting cards on those games. So if you're in Vancouver, I would say your best bet would probably be to take a drive down into Washington.
All right. There have been a few incidents recently of players substituting fake chips into poker tournaments. One casino, Maryland Live, who was burned by one of these incidents, seem to be proactively taking steps to prevent such incidents in the future. Although they won't go into great detail, part of it is so players can't take countermeasures, They will have several different sets of tournament chips, and players won't know which set is going to be used until they show up. Maryland Live decided that when a player moves from a busted table, he won't carry his own chips, but rather an electronic card that indicates how many chips he's supposed to have. Casino officials have also introduced procedures for the bag and tag operations at the end of a tournament day. Richard, how effective do you think these steps are going to be?
Well, I think it's really a step in the right direction, and there ought to be sort of worldwide rules regarding this stuff. I mean, certainly WSOP and the World Poker Tour should come up with some standards that all tournaments adhere to, because it's just been way too loose in the past and way too many shenanigans going on. And maybe Paul will have some comments on this as well.
Well, then I'll introduce him, and then we'll ask him that. Paul Hoppe has primarily been a limit hold'em player and primarily an online poker player. When Black Friday closed down internet access to people in this country, Hoppe traveled to other countries in order to play online. He's made a number of poker instruction videos, which we'll talk about. He has written a number of books on a variety of topics. He currently lives in New Jersey. In the past, he has run a martial arts studio, so you can bet Munch and I will treat him with respect. Paul Hoppe, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Bob. Hi, Richard. Hello, Las Vegas. Oh, I always thought I'd be saying that from a stage, but I guess the radio will do.
Well, the radio is live in Las Vegas, but most of our
awesome.
Listeners are from outside of Las Vegas. We have listeners all over the country and all over the world.
Hello world, then.
Hello world, he says. Okay. Now, we were just talking about the measures that Maryland Live is going to take to prevent chip substitution in tournaments. Have you seen this story? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think anything that they do to try and improve the process is a step in the right direction. I've certainly played live tournaments and felt like there's a lot of chaos when it came to the whole chip bagging, getting your chips the next day, and moving from table to table, especially in huge events like, you know, the World Series, where you might have thousands of players. So as far as how effective these measures will be, I don't know, but at least, you know, they're trying, right? Players will find a way to get around pretty much any kind of rule that you come up with, but the harder you make it, the less effective it'll be, I guess, the getting around the measures.
It would be nice if they made the whole thing more transparent, too. I mean, you know, for years, a tournament would end, and they would count up all the chips at the end of the tournament, and, boy, there'd be some missing, you know.
Right.
They'd hold an event, you know, and at the end they would count up the chips, and there were more chips than what they had started with, you know.
Right.
They always tried to keep that really hush hush and not let people know. And I think transparency would be a good thing.
I agree completely. I feel the same way when it comes to online. When they catch people cheating or colluding online, and then they don't tell you much about who it was or what any of the hands were, and then you might just get some refund, and so you know somebody was cheating at a table you were at, but you don't really know what happened. And I think that doesn't really help people very much. I mean, a lot of these things sometimes get caught, you know, get figured out by players, and so I think the more information that everybody has, the more likely it is that, you know, we can minimize the sort of thing.
All right. You sent Richard and me a review copy of your new book with Dusty Schmidt, Poker in Practice, of Critical Concepts. But you only sent us two chapters of the book rather than the whole thing. Why was this?
Well, that was the whole thing at the time. We're experimenting with a new form of publishing called lean publishing, where...
Yeah, now, this was the first time I had ever heard that term. So where does that term come from, and what exactly is lean publishing?
It comes from originally the idea of a lean startup, which is where someone will start a company instead of coming up with a highly detailed business plan, knowing exactly what their audience is going to be, exactly what their product's going to be. Someone will come up with an idea for a product or a service, and then they'll just get it out there. It, basically, with as little they want it to be as lightweight as possible, basically, so that what they can do is they put it into action and then get people using it, and then they get feedback and they kind of find out what their audience wants, right? So they're kind of finding their audience at the same time they're finding what the audience wants, instead of just saying, this is what we're doing, digging their heels and putting a lot of money in up front. So the way that applies to publishing is, instead of, you know, traditionally when someone writes a book, we'll spend a month, 6 months, a year, a decade, however long, right? People can spend a really long time writing a book and then refining it, editing it, going through beta readers, and then putting it out there. And then by the time it gets out there, you know, maybe some of the things they were originally going to say in the first place aren't as applicable anymore. And this is especially true in technology fields. And poker strategy, I feel, is pretty much like a technology field. I've always equated it to an arms race where, you know, there's a standard way that people kind of play at one point in time, and then someone finds a way to exploit that, and then new counter exploitations come to that, and then people adapt to that. And, you know, with like with No Limit Hold'em, we'll have people were limping a lot, and then people raised a lot, and then people were three betting more, and then once people were three betting more, they started four betting more. So not to get too much into the specific strategies, but the idea is that since it changes so rapidly, what we want to do is say, here's some content that we think will help you right now. We're going to put it out right now. And even if that's only, you know, 20% of the final product, you can buy it now, and then you can give us feedback on that, and we can improve it. And also, you'll then be getting all of the updates. So right now we have three. They're kind of more parts than chapters, because they're it's actually really what the critical concepts is it's a collection of booklets that we're writing. We're writing sort of shorter form instruction, and then we're assembling all of those. So each time we put a new one out, we add it to the larger book, the compilation. And we're going to have, it looks like we're going to have seven of them. And, you know, the idea of exactly what the book is can evolve over time, depending on what people say to us, how they react. You know, if people say, oh, we want more examples, we want more detail, less detail, we can respond to that. And not that we're necessarily going to change the document every single time we get a suggestion, but it allows us a little more flexibility in the process. And it allows the readers to have a little more input in the process as well.
So the reader doesn't buy it a chapter at a time. He buys the book, and then as each chapter comes out, he gets delivered each chapter. Is that how it works?
That's correct. Although we also have an option for people to just buy one section at a time, and you know they're titled. You know, we have pay attention to bet sizing, turn your hand into a bluff, exploit capped ranges. And if someone says, oh, I'm really interested in reading this section about squeeze after the flop, they can just buy that instead of having to, you know, purchase the whole thing. But if somebody does buy the whole thing, which, you know, I'd recommend, but people can just sample one chapter, and then they can, there's a 45-day refund period, so they can just go then buy the whole thing if they like the, you know, the one chapter. But the idea is then you keep getting them. Yes.
Just so our listeners understand, I mean, I read the two chapters. I actually really like them. And the format is you describe a specific concept, like the first chapter was about paying attention to the size of people's bets. And so you talk about that, and then you give a number of example hands after that. And I thought I actually really enjoyed the two chapters I read. Now, if I buy the book and I get these early chapters, and then you're adapting them, you say, "Hey, there's an update to your chapter, re-downloaded," or how does that work?
Yes. So, what happens is if you buy the whole thing, you'll get an email every time. Not necessarily every time we update it, but every time we update it in a way that we think is significant, right? So if we were to say maybe add just one hand to a chapter, I might not send out an email right away if I knew that the next day I was going to add a whole nother section then I would probably wait just so that you're not getting an email like every day. But we do have a basically a log of changes where you'll know, okay, now there's a new part available and you get an email notification. You can have the notifications turned off also, I believe, but as long as you sign up and you say that you want to receive notification whenever there's a new one available, you'll get notified. We'll tell you exactly what we've changed. Like in one of them, there was a line missing. Somehow it didn't get from, one draft into the next. It just disappeared. So someone notified us, went right in, added it, and then sent out an email saying, download this. There's a new version available in case you're wondering, like, what happened to the flop in hand number 7 or whatever.
There are thousands of poker books on the market. Why should our listeners pick up Poker in Practice specifically?
Well, there are a lot of great poker books out there, I think. And the majority of them, I'd say, tend to focus on theory, which is a great place to start. But what we're trying to focus on, the reason we call it Poker in Practice, is we give a little bit of a concept, and then we give a lot of hands, which are basically, a lot of these concepts are concepts that some players may be very familiar with already. But what we're trying to do is really make them accessible so that the reader can take the concept and then actually apply it to their own play by being able to see it, see the thought process through the whole hand, as opposed to just having, often in a book, you'll have a hand and it'll just be there to illustrate one concept, and that's fine. But what we do with our hands is, instead of just saying, okay, this is about pay attention to bet sizing, yeah, great, but we're also going to talk about, the little preflop decisions, even if they're pretty straightforward. We're going to talk about the river plays. We're going to talk about the whole hand, as a whole, and just have that hand be something that does illustrate the main concept, but we're not necessarily going to limit to that. We're going to try to have it illustrate the entire thought process of, a very successful player.
How long does it take usually before each new concept comes out?
Ideally a week. That's what we're aiming for. It's been a little slower than that over the last few weeks, trying to get all of our website up and stuff like that. The next several concepts, though, are going to come out very rapidly. We have one that may be released tomorrow. That would be number 4. And then 5, 6, and 7 are going to come out very quickly. They're all in states of completion. So it should be pretty soon.
And what other concepts are coming?
We have Squeeze After the Flop, which is, I think, a very fun concept because the pre-flop squeeze play has gotten so popular where it's just a thing that somebody may or may not be doing. But I think people don't take advantage of very similar conditions which arise after the flop. So that's not the next one, but it's the one right after that. That'll be out probably next week. And then we also have one called Make Their Scare Card Your Scare Card, where, there are a lot of scary cards in Hold'em. And, sometimes they scare us, but if we think about how they could scare the other player just as much, we can leverage that. And then the last one's about overbetting, which kind of brings it full circle back to, the pay attention to bet sizing. But we're really just focusing on one type of bet that I'd say is underutilized in most players' games, and trying to get behind, the theory of it and the mechanics of it, but then also, of course, put it into practice and show how people can use it in a variety of scenarios.
Now, in the first two chapters, Dusty is actually a player in each of the examples' hands.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of the hands that is in there, he wins.
Yeah.
So his logic always works, and he always reads it right. So I'm going to get this book because I want to win every hand. Now, I got a feeling it doesn't quite work that way.
It certainly doesn't. And I would actually say that's one of the larger weaknesses of the first two sections. I'd say we correct that in the third section partially. I think there's a hand that he loses, but then we also used one of my hands that apparently I didn't play as well as I could have. So I think it is very important to understand these things don't work all the time. Sometimes our reads are wrong. Sometimes we make the right play and then we lose the hand anyway. And that's something that, actually reader feedback kind of helped us. It was something that was in my head somewhere, but hearing it from other people makes us think, okay, it's really that's a mistake, you know? And I don't want to say like, oh, those first two sections are bad because of that, but it's certainly not a lesson I want people to take home that, oh, as long as you play well and you pay attention to these concepts, you're going to win every hand. That's absolutely not the case. You're going to win more money on average. You're going to win some pots you wouldn't win otherwise, but, you know, there is going to be variance, of course.
You produce instructional poker videos for dragthebar.com. There are there are other sites that produce instructional poker videos for money. How is dragthebar.com different from the other sites?
When I joined it, it was different in that it didn't have a limit hold'em department. So I actually formed that and made a whole lot of limit hold'em videos. That was about 4 years ago now. Now I'm making no limit hold'em videos because it's very difficult to find a limit hold'em game in New Jersey online anyway. But I'd say the thing that separates Drag the Bar to me from a lot of other sites is I think Hunter, who's in charge of, you know, collecting talent basically and assembling coaches for the site, I really think he puts a much higher priority on a coach's ability to communicate and to teach. And that's not to say that other sites don't have a lot of great coaches. There are a lot of good options for coaching sites. But one thing that I think he really does is focus less on the name and less on, okay, this player is going to draw in people because they're popular. I think, you know, unless it's Phil Galfond or Phil Ivey, you know, that's not the reason someone's necessarily going to sign up. I think when you focus on people who can really communicate effectively, which I think Hunter's done and I think Drag the Bar does, I think that's that sets them apart a little bit.
Now, but you also do videos at your site, which is pokerisaskill.com,
correct,
right?
Yes.
So I looked at some of each. At both sites, the videos are free, right?
No, that's not accurate. At Poker is a Skill, all of the videos we have are free. We also have free articles and, you know, various columns about strategy and then about other poker ideas. On Drag the Bar, it's a subscription service. Now you can get it for free if you sign up for different sites and you rake a certain amount, you can end up getting it for free. But they do have a certain number of free videos, some of which I've made there. But overall, it's a subscription service where it's a paid service as opposed to Poker is a Skill where, you know, we sell books, but outside of that, all the content we have on there is for free. And ideally kind of aimed at helping people who've sort of decided, okay, I like playing poker, I enjoy playing poker, but I'm losing money or I'm not really winning, kind of getting those players to the point where, you know, they can become a little bit more intermediate advanced players and maybe benefit more from things like the books that we publish that are a little more advanced.
Now, you
mentioned that you were playing Limit Hold'em online, but mm-hmm. hasn't Limit Hold'em been solved?
No. Well, no.
I mean,
Heads Up Limit Hold'em has – bots have been – okay. it certainly hasn't been solved by any players. There are situations in the game that have essentially been solved. The same can be said for No Limit. The thing is that No Limit has a much more complex decision tree because, you know, it's analog compared to digital, right? Limit's binary or trinary decisions, whereas No Limit, you can bet anywhere from, you know, one blind to however many chips you have left. But at points in a no limit tree, it does get very simple because, you know, you're basically either all in or you're going to fold. And that can happen very early in a hand, whereas limit, you're always going to have a, you know, pre-flop, flop, turn, river, unless someone folds. And people don't like to fold in limit. But bots have gotten to the point where they can pretty much crush any human player's heads up. And then there are maybe some good six max bots that were kind of suspected of playing on Party Poker. There's a whole big deal about it, but I think they've gotten removed. So as far as actual players playing, I would say that people aren't playing the completely solved version of the game. That's not really what's happening.
Right. But you could still sit down against a bot pretty easily and not realize it.
It could happen. And on some sites, it's certainly more of a concern. I see a lot of people worrying about it a lot more than I'd say. I never worried about it very much and had perfectly good results. One thing about you can sit down against a really good bot, but you can also sit down against a bad bot. I mean, it's not like just by something being a bot, it's necessarily going to be that good at poker. I think the actual solution is so complex that it's not something that everyone's going to have access to, certainly.
Hey, have you seen these machines they have in the casino now where you can play heads up, limit hold'em against the machine?
I haven't actually seen them, but I'm familiar with them. Yeah, I've heard people talking about them.
Yeah, there was a big article in the New Yorker about them. I'm just wondering if you tried beating them.
I haven't. I know people who have, and I think they're basically the limits that they offer are low enough that anyone who might be able to beat those bots, because those bots I think are very good, anyone who might be able to beat those bots, it probably wouldn't so much be worth their while. Like they'd rather be online playing much higher stakes.
Yeah.
But they probably, you know, they aren't going to put a machine out there that's really easy to beat and then just leave it out there to die, right? If it's losing, they're going to find a way to improve it or get rid of it. Do you know where they have them? They have them in
Vegas.
They're
all over in Las Vegas. But according to the article in the New Yorker, they actually had to dumb the machine down a little bit because it just crushed people too quickly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, the article said that there are people who would be able to beat it, but as you said, maybe the stakes are low enough that the really good players, you know, it's not worth their time.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've heard, they're basically like $2, $4, and, you know, $2, $4 is kind of the lowest limit that you can play profitably online.
I think you can play much higher than that on these machines.
It's not totally true, but kind of, because of break.
Yeah, I think you can play much higher than that on these machines. But
really?
I'll go take a look at one next time I'm in Vegas.
I'll have to look into them because Heads Up Limit is one of my favorite games.
You have a book with Dusty Schmidt called Don't Listen to Phil Hellmuth.
Yes.
Now, this title isn't quite as aggressive as Kill Phil that our guest last week, Blair Rodman, came out with, but it's still intriguing. What's that book about?
I wanted to title it How to Lose at Poker, actually, and then with the subtitle correcting, you know, the 50 worst pieces of poker advice you've ever heard. You know, and the idea is not really just to pick on Phil. He's just kind of a poster child for it. But, you know, just advice that's been put out there that is either just very bad advice to begin with or that's frequently misconstrued or just overly general, right? Things like, you know, playing tight is good, so playing super tight is even better, which just isn't really true, right? So we basically just take 50 pieces of advice that people will often hear, you know, they'll probably have heard something like that, and pretty much just debunk them and use that as a way of explaining a different concept, right? Something that's a little broader maybe, or trying to tell kind of more of the whole truth as opposed to like, well, yeah, that's kind of true sometimes given these specific conditions, but if you look at other circumstances, like you wouldn't want to take that advice and just blindly apply it to everything.
Would you say the book is for beginners, for intermediates, or for pretty strong players?
I'd say that there's something useful for everybody. The first 10 to 15 chapters are certainly more geared towards beginners, and then as the book progresses, you know, I did it with Dusty when he was playing a lot of no limit. That, I mean, he still is, but he was very much, you know, at the top of the game, and I was pretty much a limit player then. I had no limit experience, but it was mostly his strategy ideas, and I was trying to give them form. So I tried to take it from a flop, you know, pre-flop, flop, turn, river, and then kind of general ideas about poker sort of spectrum. And in general, as you progress through the hand, you get into more advanced concepts, especially on the turn. And so there are some things that I'd say, you know, a beginning player, not that they shouldn't read, but they're probably not going to be able to make use of certain types of plays. They're going to have a harder time executing some of that stuff. Whereas the earlier part of the book is definitely geared more towards beginning players. And then we have 25 hands with Dusty section, which is sort of like what we have in poker in practice, where it's a bunch of hands. Here it's just a bunch of hands that could be about anything, and we just explain the thought process. And I think that should be useful to pretty much any player.
So you're a cash game player, but the World Series is coming up. Do you play any tournaments, and are you planning to play in any of the World Series events?
I don't play a lot of tournaments. I have played the World Series a couple times, and I'm planning on going this year. I think it's a lot of fun. I find the prospect of playing tournaments for a living sort of madness. I know people who do it successfully, and that's great. But it's the variance is sort of on a whole different level because it's not hand-to-hand or session-to-session. It's like, you know, you can run great for 7 hours and then one bad hour and it's like for naught. And you know, the World Series, like the main event, I played a few years ago, and you know, getting into the bubble of that event is so interesting because you've played 3.5 days to get there, you know, and you're sitting there thinking like it's not just about the money. And it is a pretty significant money bubble, but it's, you know, in addition to the money, it's all that time and emotion and effort that you've invested in it. And thinking, oh, well, if I ship here with my tens when, you know, maybe I'm just a flip, maybe that's the right play. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But if, you know, if I make a mistake here or if I run bad here, you know, it can be pretty brutal. And I saw one guy busted out. I was at the bubble, and it was basically the bubble guy, not the person who's technically the last bubble guy who gets like a free entry into the next year's World Series. It was the person before that. And he shipped it in with like a million chips with pocket aces, and a guy called him off with pocket jacks, and of course the jacks won. And just thinking that that person could sit there for, you know, 3 days and almost an entire fourth day and get it in so good and then just go home with nothing was kind of depressing. Yeah. But, you know, hey, that's poker.
That's sick. Actually, I've known people for many, many years who go to the World Series just to play the cash games because hear those are really great.
Yeah, I've gone to Vegas during the World Series just to play the cash games as well. Often there are games I think that are spread during the series that are much harder to find the rest of the year. And for that matter, I think there are people that kind of follow the tournament circuits around to play in certain cash games, like some of the bigger. Often limit type of games, but I'm sure they have no limit and pot limit and mixed games, stuff like that, that really they kind of follow the tournaments where they're maybe someone busts out and then they go play those games or whatever. But I found the games to be rather fantastic during the World Series. Yes.
Now,
go ahead, Bob.
Between choosing live and online play, you seem to have a preference for online play. And so what are the differences and why do you prefer online?
I prefer online as a job in terms of just making money. I think I don't want to say it's easier because the games are a lot tougher. But, you know, variance is something that happens over a number of hands. And online, I can play 3 times as many hands per table. And live, well, a couple times I was allowed to play 2 tables, but in general, they keep you to the one, right? So even if I just play, say, 3 tables or 6 tables online, I can get 10 or 20 times as many hands per hour. So that variance happens a lot faster. Also, I can play smaller stakes to have the same hourly rate. So I'm getting paid the same amount, but I need a smaller bankroll. So that's, you know, I need less operating capital. So just from a business standpoint, I think playing online makes a lot more sense in general. Personally, I actually find playing online live a lot more fun. Playing online is like playing a video game. I can just sit at home in my pajamas and, you know, fire up a bunch of tables, put on Pandora, you know, rock out and just click buttons. And that's fun and that's fine. But live is this social experience where, you know, you hear crazy stories or you have crazy stories where someone's falling asleep on the couch or someone's like begging you to stay at 10 a.m. and saying they're going to go out to the bank and get, you know, $3,000 so you can keep playing or whatever. And or they're making bets on the over under on a fly strip on like how many flies are going to get caught overnight. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that doesn't really happen while you're playing online poker. So I really do enjoy the social aspects of playing live, and the feel of the chips and the cards in my hand. You know, it's more of a visceral thing. Stacking chips, that's just one of the most fun things in poker. You win a huge pot online, it's like, yay, you know. you win a huge pot live, and you're stacking those chips for the next 5 minutes. So, you know, one I'd say is more recreationally satisfying, and the other one's just a little bit easier of a business model.
You're doing something right now that I consider insane, but maybe you can explain it. You are starting at the lowest micro stakes, 5 to 10
yeah.
cents, and working your way up to 10, 20, 5 and $10 or 10 and 20, whatever they have in New Jersey.
Yeah, pretty much.
Why are you doing this?
I set insane challenges for myself fairly regularly, and some of them are successful, some of them not so much. This one, it was maybe 2 weeks into the year, and I was like, what am I doing? Why, you know, why did I decide to do this? You know, one thing is I just like a challenge. I like setting a goal for myself, and then it gives me sort of something concrete to strive for. The other thing, though, is actually as a coach and as a teacher of poker, I feel like I often hear coaches giving advice about hands in a setting that they've never really been in, right? I'd played, I don't know, maybe a few hundred, couple thousand hands of 5 cent, 10 cent, right? But if I'm going to have students or I'm going to be writing a book or a booklet for playing 5 cent, 10 cent, how am I going to do that if I haven't played a decent amount of it, if I don't really know what's going on in those games? So I thought that, you know, this challenge and one of the things I'm doing, I'm making videos about it for Drag the Bar. I'm also working on a series of books, a separate series. The first one's called Nickels, Dimes, and Chocolate Covered Cranberries. And it's, you know, it's kind of a mix of like a journal, sort of just following my thought process and emotions through trying to break down No Limit Hold'em and really learn it from the ground up, kind of relearn it and be like, okay, how should I go about beating this simplest, lowest of the limits? And I know there's like 1 cent, 2 cent, and 2 cent, 4 cent. And I thought about that, but then I just thought I'd keep a certain amount of my sanity and, you know, skip those two. But then as I progress, you know, I'm interested to see sort of how the play changes throughout the course of the year and what, you know, when I want to start introducing new concepts, when I want to add new plays to the repertoire. And I'm really, you know, there are spots where there are maybe some advanced kind of ideas that I could try to use, but I'm trying to kind of leave them until I feel like they're necessary and appropriate to the games I'm playing in. So, you know, one's a sense of adventure and one's sort of to gain a sense of perspective on, you know, the games that are out there and really be able to be kind of a more complete teacher who can teach all these different levels.
So how are the games in New Jersey? I mean, what is the state of poker and online poker in New Jersey?
Yeah, the games are outstanding. It's in terms of just loose money, people getting it in and kind of gambling it up, and it seems like really having fun playing poker. They're, you know, the games are kind of unlike anything I've seen in a number of years. Now, that said, I started at 5 cent, 10 cent, so you'd expect 5 cent, 10 cent games to be pretty good, right? But
yeah,
from what I understand, and even just having played 5 cent, 10 cent on Full Tilt a few years ago or on PokerStars, well, okay, I hadn't played it on PokerStars recently, but you know, I think those games were tougher than these ones are here right now. And moving up through, I'm playing a quarter 50 now, and maybe next month 50 cents a dollar. Still, I feel like these games are better than most of the ones I've seen. And part of that's the way, like some of the sites really, they're not super grinder friendly, right? Like Party Poker, Borgata, it's difficult to join tables. It's kind of a pain. Also, I get bounced every 90 minutes because of geolocation, because they like think that I've moved from my desk somehow and I'm not in New Jersey anymore. I don't really know what's going on with that, but throughout the state, supposedly it's gotten better. And then other sites don't have live hand history importing, so you can't really use a HUD, which isn't that big of a deal, but you have to take the hand histories and like manually edit them or find and replace all the times it says 888 and change it to something else. And that's not really something I want to deal with that much. So I think that kind of helps keep the games good a little bit. I've always had a theory that the worse the software is, the better the games are, because players who want to put in a lot of volume kind of aren't going to put up with it in general as often. So, right. But you know, the games are really good. The software and the sites, I think, have some distance to cover in terms of, you know, providing the best service they can. I think it's a shame that PokerStars was essentially, you know, blacklisted, you know, because they didn't leave right after the UGA passed.
Who has the most games who has the most games now in New Jersey?
Party and Borgata, they're a network, and the two of them, you know, they share a player pool. So I think they have about half of the players. They have a lot of, you know, no limit cash games from what I've seen throughout the limits, you know, from 5 cent, 10 cent, all the way up through 1-2. They have, you know, double digit games a lot of the time. And then at 2-4, 3-6, 5-10, they have games. None of the sites are doing very well in terms of limit hold'em, and that's because they don't really understand how they should rake limit hold'em, so they're just squeezing it to death, which is really a shame because I think in New Jersey they could actually get something going. I mean, if you go to the Borgata, they have limit hold'em going all the time. So, you know, I think they're missing a big opportunity there. But and I do think that PokerStars has been the industry leader for a reason because they listen to players and they try and, you know, really make things functional for people. And if Party and some of these other sites took that a little more, if they took that model a little bit more instead of thinking this is how we want to do it and then just doing it, I think they would be more successful. That, you know, they would do better themselves. They would do themselves a service and all the players a service.
You know, I was watching one of your videos, and It was a hand where you were talking about how it was a hand where basically no bets were made, and you were getting to the river and there were 2.5 big blinds in the pot, and you were saying, you know, to make 2.5 big blinds an hour, you know, is good, but you know, if it's twice that, 5 big blinds an hour is actually a good sort of rate of return.
Right.
And is that right? Is that what people, like good players, expect to make, is 5 big blinds an hour?
It really depends on the stakes and the game conditions. And, you know, if players have a lot of rake back, it's going to be different. In, you know, online in general, we count per 100, you know, big blinds per 100. But you can get close to 100 hands an hour, so it's kind of comparable. So it'd be like 5 blinds per hour or per 100 at a table. That would be pretty good at any kind, you know, mid stakes, anything 1-2 or higher. I think below that, I think that should certainly be achievable. And like at 5 cent, 10 cent, I think you would want to make more than that. You know, that wouldn't be great or anything.
50 cents an hour isn't enough. Okay. 50 cents an hour wouldn't be enough.
Well, right, exactly. Well, I mean, if you play 6 tables, that's like $3 an hour. That's,
now we're talking money.
You know, exactly. Yeah.
But so for years in Vegas, before the whole no limit boom, the all the limit players, one big blind an hour was considered, you know, what the good players made. That's at limit. I mean, is that different with online?
Yes and no. I think in general is one big bet an hour, which caused some confusion when translating that to no limit. And then there's something called like a poker tracker big bet, which is like 2 big blinds, because a big blind is half of the big bet in limit hold'em.
That's right. One big bet an hour. Right. You're right.
Right, exactly. But so in limit, you know, if you can make one big bet per hour per table or per 100 hands, that's a solid, you know, limit hold'em win rate. You know, for a while I was around 2 in ring games. And this is like a 6-handed or a 9-handed game. In a heads-up game, you should be able to ideally make a lot more than that. More, you know, up to, you know, 4 or 5 maybe is pretty good. But in today's games, I mean, the limit hold'em games have really gotten a lot tougher. And all the way down through $2, $4, $1, $2. And, you know, these sound like pretty small stakes, but when you think that you can have 6 tables going and getting 100 hands an hour, it's, you know, $2, $4 online is like, you know, you can make more than you can make maybe in a 10-20 game live, or maybe almost like what you can make in a 20-40 game. But yes, I'd say one big bet per hour is still kind of like, you know, the gold standard of like, that's good, you know. And it's certainly possible to do better than that. And you can do a little worse than that and still feel like you're, you know, doing well. But that's kind of, there is a line there. And that's different from No Limit, of course, because, you know, No Limit, we're talking about blinds. And then also, since in No Limit, players can make such, you know, larger mistakes, you can get, you know, stacks in, and they can get stacks in really bad sometimes. And that's how you can have a much higher win rate than you could, almost than you could possibly have in Limit, because it's kind of like in Limit, there, you know, there's a limit to how bad you can play, right? Because there's only so much money you can put in the pot in a hand. Whereas in No Limit, you can, you know, you can put your whole stack in. I mean, in one of these New York clubs, there's a guy who I used to like get texts every time he showed up at different places because he would just go in blind every hand and then buy in for double. You know, he'd do like a martingale and just ship it every single hand. And that's, you know, I calculated it at one time, and I don't remember what it was, but it was, you know, it was worth $100. Hundreds of dollars an hour to just be sitting at a table with him.
So maybe $1,000. So you're saying a guy who plays 2-5, a good player in 2-5, that's playing live, is making $25 an hour?
I think that would be good for 2-5.
Wow.
Yeah, go ahead.
We always compare poker to blackjack,
and
you know. In my book, I had interviewed Tommy Hyland, and this was, you know, a dozen years ago, you know, and he said to make $50 an hour playing poker, you have to be quite good, and to make $50 an hour at blackjack is nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I think this really sort of corroborates that.
I think so. To make $50 an hour at a 2-5 game, that just to give you an idea of what the sort of big blinds per 100 hands, right, that we were talking about in online play, in order to make $50 an hour, you would need to be making 10 big blinds per hour. And in live games, they tend to deal somewhere between 25 and maybe 30-something hands an hour. So say they dealt 25 hands an hour, you would be winning 5 blinds in 25 hands. I'm sorry, 10 blinds in 25 hands. So you'd be looking at 40 big blinds per hour, which would be a ridiculous win rate. Whereas if they get 33, right, then you're going to multiply the 10 blinds by 3 to get 99, close to 100. That's going to be, 30 big blinds per hour, which is also ridiculous. So you'd need to be in phenomenal games. We would be talking about not a 2-5 game with, you know, $500 stacks. We'd be talking about a 2-5 game where everybody has big stacks, and then they're just kind of going crazy, and you're sitting there
and, drunk,
you know, winning big pots when they get in really bad.
Wow.
But I mean, on the other hand, you know, what sort of bankroll would you need to be making $50 an hour in blackjack without, you know, with a reasonable risk of ruin?
Not much. I don't know.
Oh, really?
$25,000, $30,000 maybe.
Okay. That would be substantially more. Well, I don't know.
Well,
yeah, maybe I should change games.
Yeah.
Maybe so. And we're going to need to cut you off so we can pay some bills. We thank you very much, Paul Hoppe, for joining us. This has been very enjoyable and very entertaining. Now, pokerisaskill.com, if somebody wants to talk to you, can they get through to you through that?
Yes, they can find me there.
Very good.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
I'm still not ready to go become a poker player.
Yeah, boy, me either. I mean, I enjoy playing socially. You know, like he said, when you play live, you know, it's a social occasion. But, boy, there's not much money in it.
All right. Now, the South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. That's more games than anybody else has. They have a series of progressive bonuses in March, each starting at $10,000 and guaranteeing to be hit by $25,000. These awards are given to slot and video poker players. Should you be playing while somebody else wins the award, you receive $20 in free play. Once a bonus jackpot hits, another one begins immediately. This goes on through the month 24/7. They have smaller daytime progressive, each one starting at 1 p.m. at $1,000 and guaranteed to be hit by $2,500. The free video poker class at the South Point this next Wednesday at noon will be Deuces Bonus. This is a Deuces Wild game where you receive more for five of a kinds, but only even money for straights. There are significant strategy variations when you switch between Deuces Wild and Deuces Bonus. At the Palms, the Friday night drawings take place at 7 p.m. Winners shared $7,500 each week, and the top winners each week come back next Friday, March 28th, where one winner will get $10,000. You earn five times drawing tickets on Friday and Saturday evenings between 8 and midnight. The Play, Earn, and Win awards from now until March 28th are from Tiffany Jewelers. The top prize is a $200 Tiffany gift card, which requires 80,000 video poker points to earn. You can store up points over several days, but you can only redeem one of each of the gifts per day from now until next Friday. There are some lesser gifts, such as wine glasses and champagne glasses, should you not want to play the full 80,000. VideoPoker.com remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw, Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, and many others. Often these games are the best returning games in a casino, and you need practice to make sure you know how to play. For their daily contest this week, they have 50-play draw poker with Quick Quads, Ultimate Four-of-a-Kind Bonus Poker, and Spin Poker. Ultimate Four-of-a-Kind Bonus Poker is one we haven't spoken about recently. It's a 6-coin-per-line game. There are two separate bonuses on the game. First, you get more for all four-of-a-kinds, and in addition, dealt quads, you get to pick one or more of 53 cards and earn bonuses. The number of bonuses you get depends on which dealt quad you receive going in. And according to the WizardOfOdds.com, the average payout of the bonus round is approximately 300 coins for each pick you receive. So if you get four picks, on your average return is going to be right around 1,200. The top one is if you get the Joker, which is one of the 53 cards, it's $39.96. I'm not sure how they got that number, but it's basically the same as a Royal Flush. The bonus adds more than a percent to the basic return for the game, and you need to check out the strategies because the higher pay for four of a kind will change a few of the plays, but not many. Strategies are not that sensitive to higher pay on four of a kinds. So, Richard, our guest next week is Richard Marcus. Tell us a little bit about him, please.
Richard Marcus is a cheat. He's mostly a past poster, but he wrote a fascinating book called American Roulette that details his exploits of cheating at roulette, mostly by past posting, around Las Vegas and actually in casinos around the world. So we are going to talk to him about that book, and I highly recommend that book. Definitely a fascinating read.
Yeah, when you and Anthony Curtis mentioned this a couple months ago, I went out and got the book and read it and wrote a review of it on my Tuesday blog on the LVA, and I enjoyed that book a lot. We got about 1 minute left and came across something a little bit interesting, not having anything to do with gambling, but at the South Point, they have a hamburger joint called Steak and Shakes, and it's kind of a 50s malt shop, and you can get milkshakes for half price for 2 o'clock from 2 to 4 in the afternoon and also from 2 to 4 in the morning. I found that extremely curious. Nowhere else in Las Vegas would you, than other than Las Vegas, would you get a half price milkshake special from 2 and 4 in the morning. I thought that was kind of curious.
Yeah, that's weird. Why those hours? I mean,
But since I'm not a milkshake drinker, I probably will never find out, but I suspect they're pretty good.
I have to keep my girlish figure, so I'll be passing on that one.
Okay. Well, there's other specials that there too. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. Thank you, Paul Hoppe. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of Royal Flushes, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.